to order the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors for April 15, 2020, time being 9 a.m. Director Polly, would you lead us to the flag of pledge of allegiance, please?
I'll stand up and flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Council, do we have any additions or deletions to the agenda today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Mr. Council Neal. Subsequent to the posting of the agenda we received a complaint that requires the board's consideration. So I ask for the board to consider adding to the agenda item 9A as a closed session item. Potential litigation pursuant to government code section 54956.9, one case, and I need a motion that the need to take action on this item arose subsequent to the posting of the agenda. That will allow the board to add this item to the agenda.
All right, do we have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We have a roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Okay.
Director
Rucker? Aye.
Okay, motion passes 4-0 with Director Slauson not commenting this morning.
Thank you.
With that, we'll go to any public comments. Any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD, speakers are required to limit their comments to 3 minutes. And seeing no cards or no one in the audience with their hand up, we'll move on to the executive reports. Paul?
Thank you. Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report's included in your board package. I do have a couple of items I would like to go over. First, with respect to our COVID-19 precautions and our status update regarding our paid work from home and other changes we have here at EMWD. As the board's aware, at the present time, the federal, state, and local officials have not rescinded stay-at-home orders. Although Governor Newsom yesterday gave a framework outline for indicators that would be considered to determine the state's lifting the state's stay-at-home order, no specific dates or metrics were put in place on that. As such, we have a current stay-at-home order, work-at-home order, for about 280 of our employees. That was going to expire next Monday, so we're extending that 2 weeks to May 4th, 2020. We're doing this in two-week increments. I do want to say, however, that staff has really stepped up to the challenge on this. We have very good protocol in place for supervisors and managers to provide assignments to staff that are working from home, and the timelines are being met. In addition, for the remaining employees that are on site, we are obviously doing all the social distancing, wearing face coverings, hand washing, and we have notification requirements in place for if anybody comes in contact with someone who's known to have COVID-19 or if an employee feels ill in any way. So our services are all being provided right now, and I think we're doing a good job in that regard, and I think we're open for business, just doing business a little bit different way. So we'll be under this same protocol of the staff on the stay-at-home work status through May 4th, or as modified by the district. Yesterday, Metropolitan approved its operating budget and capital budget and rates for the next two fiscal years. This was on the agenda for their board. They considered these as separate items, with the operating budget and rates as one item and the capital budget as another item. The Met board considered three options, including a modification from their original proposal, which was a 3%, and so the option was a 3% increase in January 2021 and a 4% rate increase in January 2022. They had a second option that would have deferred their original 5% rate increase for 6 months to July 2021, and then have a 5% rate increase 6 months later in January 2022. And then they had a third option that was to just defer consideration of the rates and budgets to May, rates and budgets in May or June. Obviously, this is a controversial topic, raising rates in this environment. There was substantial public testimony. There was also substantial board deliberation, but ultimately the MET board voted by a margin of 63.9% to approve option one, which was the 3% rate increase. The MET board or the MET staff did incorporate many of the suggestions that Eastern recommended in our letter of April 7th to MWD. The directive in the board's action also was to come back in August to the board with cost containment measures on the operating capital side to basically look at the second year rate increase could be potentially mitigated to some extent. On the capital side, MET also approved its $500 million capital investment plan or capital budget for fiscal years 2021 and 2021-2022. Of note was that plan included funding for some very key projects that are important to Eastern, most notably the Paris Valley Pipeline, what we call the GAP Pipeline, which is the tunnel under the I-215 at Rant Van Buren. That was fully included in the CIP, as well as the Lake Paris Seepage Recovery Project. And also they have a reference to a future project at Diamond Valley Lake to provide utilities to the marina. So that was approved as well on a across-the-board unanimous vote. So with that, that summarized the net rate increases. Director Record, is there anything you'd like to add with respect to that?
No, Paul, I think you covered it well.
Under past and ongoing activities, I wanted to give a little bit more detail on the executive order that Governor Newsom issued on April 3rd regarding the prohibition for residential and small business water shutoffs. That executive order also included a requirement that we restore any residential service to occupied residences that had been discontinued for non-payment since March 4th. However, because of SB 998, at the time we were not at disconnecting customers for non-payment. We had not reached that portion of the cycle, so we just continued that practice. And also, we've directed our customer service representatives to work very carefully with customers to attempt to get them on payment plans if they cannot pay their bill. That's the goal. Ultimately, of course, we never want to shut off a customer, but our customer service staff has been given wide latitude to put customers on payment plans and to also forgive late fees if they are willing to go on a payment plan. And that has been very effective today. So overall, the impacts of the COVID-19 and the implications of this executive order on our revenues are going to be brought back to the board in May, and so we will have a full report to the board with our financial metrics at that time. Under items of interest, I placed in front of you and emailed to the board an item from Metropolitan. This is a ad that they're going to be placing in all the major newspapers in Southern California. So in our area, this will go in the Press Enterprise on the 19th and also the La Prensa, the Spanish-speaking newspaper in Riverside County on the 18th. Essentially, what they're emphasizing in this is the safety of the tap water. Water supply deliveries are reliable and that there's plenty of water and water service. I think the attempt here is to ensure customers don't spend money buying bottled water during this time or focus on misinformation that's being provided sometimes by the media. This is
Charlie, are you still online?
Are you guys there? Is everybody on?
We'll just suspend the meeting for a minute until we get the audio cleared up.
We can hear you again.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Randy?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. So Matt will be putting this publication in the local newspapers this weekend. We're also continuing to focus on similar topics on our social media. We've really stepped that up on Facebook, Twitter, and our Instagram accounts. Again, we're seeing record postings or record posts on our social media. We have, for example, on our Facebook posts, we've reached a new high of 15,600 people. So we continue to emphasize these same points. We also are emphasizing heavily the issues with respect to disposing non-flushable products in the sewer system. That's a big issue for us. And so we continue to put that out there. And I think we've been getting positive response from the customers. The last item I have is with respect to something the board was previously briefed on, and this is a class action lawsuit that was filed against EMWD and 80 other water suppliers throughout California that challenges water agencies' ability to charge residents and businesses for fire service protection, particularly the water associated with that and then the infrastructure. This has now prompted a proposed legislative action, and specifically John Warlock, who is a senator from Orange County, has introduced SB 1386. That was sponsored by Irvine Ranch Water District and the San Diego Water Authority. And that essentially is going to codify a previously unpublished case law that found that agencies' abilities to recover fire service costs through rates and charges was both lawful and appropriate. So it's essentially trying to put this in law that we can continue to do that. The bill sponsors are forming a coalition of the 81 agencies, obviously. So we are signing on to that, and we'll be supporting that effort with staff resources and with our Sacramento advocacy team. And with that, I don't have anything else to report unless there's any questions by the board.
No, I just have one question. Maybe it's for Randy, that if the annexation for the new water district in San Diego County Water Authority passed yesterday without any CEQA challenge.
Yeah,
it was
just
there was
need
for presentation. I was just moved immediately.
Oh.
Okay. I just thought it's interesting that San Diego's challenging Fallbrook and Rainbow because that needs to have a CEQA challenge for de-annexation, but doesn't take one for annexation. Thank you.
Any further questions?
No, none.
Any questions on the phone?
I have no questions.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Laura.
Nothing today.
Nick.
Speaking of Fallbrook and Rainbow, I'd just like to take a moment to give you a brief update on their proposed annexation into Eastern, just so you're aware of the latest developments. We received notice a couple of days ago that San Diego LAFCO will be having a public hearing to consider and address requests from San Diego County Water Authority associated with Fallbrook and Rainbow's applications. As you're aware, about a month ago, Fallbrook and Rainbow submitted their applications to LAFCO for detachment from the San Diego County Water Authority and annexation into Eastern. Quite a voluminous application, about 250 pages, which included some materials and technical memoranda that we provided associated with Eastern's water supply and system reliability. But as I say, in response to that, the San Diego County Water Authority has submitted their own application request into San Diego LAFCO, and they have three key items that they're requesting, which will be heard at the public hearing, which is scheduled for May 4th. The first item is that they're requesting a stay of the process due to the COVID-19 pandemic. My understanding is that LAFCO is not inclined to stay or delay the process. Their position is that they're fully staffed and operational, and they so see no need, and there's going to be no impact from their perspective of moving forward with this. However, they have suggested to Fallbrook and Rainbow that if they're so inclined, they can voluntarily offer to stay in the process, but I don't think that they're going to be going in that direction. The second item is that San Diego County Water Authority is requesting that LAFCO make a determination that they are not a district or special district as defined by the 4TC Knox-Hertzberg Act, and the Act actually gives them that option to make that declaration. And if they determine that they are not a district under the Act, they're requesting that they be exempt from Part 4 of the Act, which addresses the protests and voting provisions. And it looks like that this is the County Water Authority's path to argue that any electorate vote of the process be conducted under their own County Water Authority Act. And then the third point that they're asking LAFCO to address at the public hearing is that they request that if LAFCO ultimately approves Fulbert and Rainbow's proposal, that LAFCO require that a vote of the electorate be conducted within the entire 24-member agency, San Diego County Water Authority service area. But if you look at either the Cortese Knox Hertzberg requirements for voting and protest, as well as the County Water Authority voting, it appears that the vote as spelled out, should be required within only the Fallbrook and Rainbow service area. So that's going to be something. And that's my interpretation of the reading of those requirements. So that's something that's going to be argued out by the attorneys and will ultimately be addressed in great detail at such point in time if LAFCO does approve Fulbert and Rainbow's request. So that public hearing is on May 4th. It's going to be interesting to see how LAFCO addresses those items as requested by the authority. Any questions?
What is the argument that San Diego is making as not being a special district?
The Cortese Knox-Hertzberg Act actually spells out a number of criteria. One of the key being that if there's a water agency that is just wholesaling water and is not retailing it, they can then define themselves as a non-district as defined by the CKH Act. And if they are determined to be a non-district as defined by the Act, then it appears that they can then request exemption from the Part 4, which is the protest provisions. Any other questions?
Laura. Joe.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. I wanted to introduce Sean Stone, who's sitting in the back. Sean is going to be serving as our Director of Engineering. He just started this week. He previously served as the Engineering Manager at the Inland Empire Utilities Agency and more recently as Utilities Assistant General Manager at the City of Ontario. So after a long search, we were very pleased to have Sean on board as our director.
Well,
you won't know what he looks like. He'll introduce himself once the masks come off.
Right.
Okay.
All right. The other item, President Sullivan and members of the board, is if you recall the last board meeting, staff presented an update on the Paris North groundwater contamination prevention and remediation program. At that time, we indicated to the board that we were seeking an increase in the State Water Resource Control Board funding, grant funding, from $36 million to just below $45 million. I'm happy to report that since the board meeting, the State Water Resource Control Board has forwarded to us a revised funding agreement for our review and execution that reflects a grant amount of $44.9 million. So we're very pleased with the outcome. That's it.
Wonderful. Yeah, and we'll sign that way they still have some money to give.
Right.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board.
I hope you on the phone can hear me. If you can't, please let me know. I'll try to do my best to project my voice through this mask. Just three things I want to bring to the board's attention. Rancho Water District has informed us that they need to discharge surplus recycled water. They are gearing up, looking at water quality issues, and then as well as testing equipment that has not been operated for numerous years. Gearing up for that discharge as early as tomorrow, but as late as this weekend. They're probably discharging somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 to 2 million gallons per day. So they do have partial ownership in our recycled water system from their plant all the way to our where we join the existing 54-inch line at Railroad Canyon Road. And so they have purchased capacity into that system and have that ready to discharge together with us. Second thing I'd like to bring up, this last storm was a little rough in a couple of different areas. And so you see on the screen a map of an area down in Marietta. Just to orient you, the street going east and west through the middle is Marietta House Springs Road. And you see the 215 freeway toward the left, one-third of the screen going north and south. And there's a shaded area that's kind of a mauve or pink, and then above that is a blue area. And if you look kind of up in the middle of this curve, this is Alta Marietta Drive, if you see where the mouse is here. About a year ago, the last February storm, the city encountered a problem with a large diameter storm drain that looked at a 72-inch pipe that had come apart at a joint and jeopardized a couple of Eastern's facilities. And we worked with the city to stabilize those facilities in addition to even taking a portion of the water system out of service so that they could do those repairs. So this year, this past Saturday, in the same area, kind of where I'm pointing right here at the mouse, to orient you, this is the Ross Shopping Center. This is Burlington Coat Factory at the north end. And again, right off of Alta Marietta Drive. So right where this cursor is, this storm drain, just a few yards away from where they made repair last year, has come apart again. As of right now, there's really no major impact to Eastern facilities. Our sewer is fine, whereas last time we had to support the sewer over their trench with beams and straps. The sewer is fine this year, or at this particular event. The water system, however, they've asked us to isolate it so that they can actually remove a segment of our 16-inch water main while they do the repairs on the storm drain. We were happy to do that and unfortunately able to do that. We have a small commercial center that had to be switched over to the different pressure zone. It's a 1347 pressure zone versus the area you see in blue, so 1384. It corresponds to only about a 10 psi reduction in pressure for that commercial center. They're still getting 73 psi, which is well within the normal desired range of operating pressure. So we don't anticipate any impact to our customers at this point other than a slight reduction in pressure for a small few. So the city's going to work on that project. They're estimating the repair could take over 2 weeks. And at that point, we would put our system back in service as normally operated. The other item I want to bring to your attention is we have a pair of siphons, a 16-inch and a 12-inch diameter sewer siphon that cross underneath the San Jacinto River. So on this map, I'm pointing to the San Jacinto River as it crosses the 215 freeway and crosses Case Road. Here's the office over here on the east side of the 215. This is the Paris wastewater plant. So this is just about a mile, or a little less than a mile northwest of the Paris wastewater plant. So those two siphons were installed in 1981, and one of the siphons quit operating in this rain event. It's a 12-inch diameter, not sure either cast iron or ductile iron pipe, is what how the drawings call it out. We don't know exactly which material at this point. The other siphon is parallel. It's a 6-inch diameter pipe, and it's still operating fine. The bad news is we just discovered that they are jointly encased in a common concrete encasement. So whatever the issue is on the one siphon, we're deeply concerned that the other pipe might develop a problem in the not too distant future. So given the fact that this river is standing full of water, it's not actually flowing right now, but it's full of water, it really complicates that repair. So as we learn more about the problem, we will be discussing with the general manager and engineering a plan for repairs and whether or not we need to come back to the board and officially declare this an emergency. So right now we're flowing the sewer fine, but it is, I would say, a little tentative.
We're making arrangements to bring out temporary bypass pumping so that if we should have a problem, we will hopefully not be spilling wastewater. Major concern here is that Canyon Lake is immediately downstream of this tributary. So we will keep the board posted on that. We will obtain more information, and if we decide to declare an emergency, we will be back for you there this afternoon. That's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you. Nope.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. With that, we can go to the consent calendar. We have a request that Director Slauson not vote on item C as a potential conflict of interest. So we'll accept the motion and a second for A and B through G.
I'll move the consent calendar.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Colley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Rucker?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Then we'll go to agenda item 3C.
I'll move 3C on the consent calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Mr. Chair, this is District Council. I just want the record to reflect that given that this is a telephonic meeting, Director Fox is not going to be able to get up and leave the dais, but the record should reflect that he is choosing to not participate in any deliberations or action on this item due to a potential conflict of interest.
Thank you, Council.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Rucker?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0 with Director Slauson not participating. Go to the action calendar, which is agenda item 4. 4A is to approve and authorize well 204 project initial study mitigation negative declaration.
President Sullivan, our staff member Joe Broadhead is going to present this. He is on the phone, and he'll walk us through the presentation.
Okay.
Joe?
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board.
Good morning.
I'm Ted Kirk from the Environmental Regulatory Compliance to present item 40, which addresses CEQA compliance for the Well 204 project. Slide number two. I'll begin by giving a quick overview of the Well 204 project, and I'll slide into the CEQA process that we completed for the project, and then I'll give the staff recommendation for the Well 204 project. Slide 3. Project site consists of 2.5-acre parcel located in the northern portion of the city of Paris. It's situated east of the 215 west of Lake Paris. And regional access to the site is provided via 215 east on Ramona Expressway, north on North Paris Boulevard to East Ann Street. And East Ann Street is currently a third roadway that provides access to the project site. Slide 4. The Well 204 project consists of a number of facilities located on the 2.5-acre site, including an 18-inch diameter pumpable well that will be drilled down to approximately 510 feet with the expectation of producing 100,000 gallons per minute. A well treatment facility will also be constructed on the site, capable of taking groundwater prior to distribution into our system. A 3/4-acre boil-off pond on the south side of the parcel, excavated to a depth of about 5 feet, and able to accommodate 1.2 million gallons of blow-off water. And then other features of the project include an electrical building, pipelines to connect to the street pipeline from our site, as well as a 40-foot tall communication tower. EMWP has an initial study mitigated NAPE deck prepared to address construction and operational impacts of the 204 project. And the outcome of that analysis identified potential suspects in the five categories that were biological, geosoils, hydro water quality, cultural, tribal, and noise. And the document identified mitigation measures to resolve those potential effects to a less than significant level. At the end of the day, there are no significant unavoidable impacts associated with the 204 project. Well, slide number six. So we went out with the document for 30 days, looked through the non-fed work that was completed on March 6th. We filed a notice of intent to adopt the mitigated impact in the press enterprise on February 5th. And we made the document available on the DSF website, our offices, and then two of the area libraries. At the end of the day, we did the comment period. There was three comment letters that were. One was from the original holder who wanted to know a bit more information about potential contaminants and concern. They wanted to make sure that free disposal methods for school water followed. And it was a little confusion on their part as to whether or not we were doing any surface water discharge of the blow-off water. And we clarified all of those points within the response package. And that response package, as well as the comment letters, are part of the report packet today. Second letter that came through was from the Marine Combat and Recycling Meetings. They just acknowledged the receipt of the document and they agreed with our cultural mitigation that we included in the document. And then the third comment letter was from the State Office of Planning and Minister. The State Planning Council distributes the document to 12 plus other state agencies for review and comment and the budget that we have had from opening up. Basically, they sent it out to all the agencies and they did not receive any comments that are sent to comment through. Necessary changes were incorporated into the final document. The only one of note was to clarify or the QC. These will, depending on the quality of groundwater that's extracted during the loss period. And then, as I mentioned before, all the comment letters and responses and comments are included in the final ISMND, which is part of the report now. Slide 7. Staff recommendation at this time is to approve the initial study and the mitigated negative declaration, to approve the mitigation monitoring and reporting program, and then authorize staff to file a notice of determination and pay the environmental filing fee. And with that, that closes the presentation. If there's any SQL comments, I'm here to answer.
Have any questions?
This is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Yes, I have a question on, in the initial study, there's a phase one drilling and testing exhibit. I'm just curious, what is a doghouse?
I'm sorry, what you said?
Can you repeat the question, Dave?
It's a figure two in the initial setting. Hey,
Kevin. Yeah, that was, I believe that's probably for site protection. I would have to defer to the project manager or the engineer to explain that one. We assumed it was this for site protection.
Okay, that's good enough. Thank you.
Any further questions?
I'm going to move the item.
Okay, we have a second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We'll go to agenda item 4B, which is adopt a proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District amending the EMWD Administrative Code for provisions related to recycled water service. Jeff.
The item for you today is to amend the recycled water, or the admin code with respect to service of recycled water, particularly for marijuana and hemp. This issue was brought to our attention after we observed an action that the Imperial Aviation took, whereby, and it's a little different for them versus us, they received Bureau of Reclamation waters, federal water, from the American Canal or American River, and that water is basically federal water sold to the Imperial Aviation for resale to their growers, and they took an action formalizing that they will no longer sell that water for the irrigation of cannabis. Under the Federal Controlled Substance Act, cannabis is a Schedule I controlled substance. More recently, there's the 2018 Farm Bill, which made a distinction between hemp and cannabis, and hemp is now a legally grown and distributed product under the Federal Farm Bill, subject to each individual state submitting a plan to the federal government and obtaining approval. So California is well on the way for that approval. The challenge that's come about for Eastern is that there's a kind of a disjointed structure between the federal regulations with regard to marijuana and hemp and cannabis compared to the federal government. So the California rules and regulations regarding marijuana are different than the federal government. So staff reached out to legal counsel and asked them to help walk us through or guide us through this issue and ensure that the district is not doing anything that would potentially jeopardize us as an agency, or and more particularly the funding that we obtain from the Bureau of Reclamation for construction of portions of our recycled water system. So most pointedly, there are two contracts that we obtained substantial amounts of funding from the federal government. Our 2009 and 2016 contracts clearly state that the district must abide by all federal laws. So even though the Bureau of Reclamation does not specifically count on recycled water as a federal water that's being sold, they do have within their guidance, internal staff guidance document, information that basically says that all activities associated with Bureau projects, Bureau funding, et cetera, must abide by their laws. So OMLO, our legal counsel, reviewed this issue for us, and just to cite their bottom line, they're saying, given the ambiguity presented in the governing statutes and policies, we think the safe course of action would be to refrain from fighting water to cannabis producers out of abundance of caution. This is really, again, to ensure that we don't jeopardize some of the funding that we've already obtained for our recycled water infrastructure. So before you, this resolution today is that we would address this kind of at a high level, modifying three different sections within the admin code. They're all within Title VII. The first one is Article 4, and the other two are Article the first one's under Article 1, the other two under Article 4. And they basically modify our code to say that the use of recycled water shall be consistent with federal and local laws in addition to state law. And so it's basically a kind of cleanup item to ensure that we can deal with this issue in a way that's not going to jeopardize some of the infrastructure funding that we've obtained. And then as maybe perhaps in the future these the federal government and state government come together on this issue, it should be much easier to navigate. So based on the advice of the legal counsel, we're recommending to the board that we make these changes to our admin code. And I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Do you have any questions of Jeff?
Maybe Jeff, Brad, or Stephen. We don't always know what our end customer is using our water for, correct?
That's correct.
And does this put us in jeopardy if we, I don't want to say accidentally, but if our end user is not being honest with us about what agriculture products they're growing?
So when
I can jump in, Jeff. That was Director Pauly. This is the code is being amended to include an amendment to the conditions of service. And if someone is taking recycled water, they'll be taking pursuant to our requirements. And one of those requirements is that whatever purpose they're putting it to is consistent with applicable federal, state, and local laws. So the onus is on the end user.
Okay, so it doesn't put us in any legal jeopardy as far as this is concerned. If they're not being honest with us, they're not abiding by our administrative code, correct?
They would be in violation.
Okay.
I would add the application for service for recycled water is a little different than it is for a potable system in that because of all the use of Title 22 water, more concern over public health matters, our application for service for recycled water does require that the user tell us exactly what that use is going to be. And then we have annual site inspections for each of the different recycled water users. So we're covered there as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any more questions? If not, we'll entertain a motion in a second.
I'll move the item. I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Swanson?
Aye.
Director Rucker?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Agenda item 4C is adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body of Community Facilities District Number 2016-74, the Menifee Town Center, Improvement Area C, authorizing the issuance of 2020 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. In January, we presented the 2020 plan of finance and mentioned staff was working on two community facilities district bond issuances. This morning, I'll be presenting both of these for consideration by the board. This is the first of such items, and as previously mentioned by Director Sullivan, pertains to community facilities district number 2016-74, improvement area C. CFD number 2016-74, Improvement Area C, was formed back in September 2016 with the intent to issue bonds in an amount not to exceed $5 million to reimburse the developer for their investments. Lennar Homes has requested a bond sale to seek reimbursement for previously incurred expenses related to EMWD, Menifee Union School District, and City of Menifee fees and facilities within the development. This development is in central Menifee along the north side of La Piedra Road at the corner of Civic Plaza and Park Plaza Avenue and is being marketed as the Village at Menifee Town Center. The property within the improvement area comprises of roughly 13 gross acres and is planned for 125 single family homes. An appraisal was conducted by Kitty Sino for this improvement area and the appraised value came in at $33.1 million, which brought the value-to-lien ratio to 8.2 to 1, exceeding our debt requirements of 4 to 1. Because the property owned by the developer exceeds 20%, as part of our debt policy, we're requiring a letter of credit as security, which will be used to pay debt service should there be any significant delinquencies. The effective tax rate is 1.95, which also meets our guidelines of a 2% max. Now, although the number of properties is below our guidelines, staff is recommending to proceed with the bond sale as all other criteria meets our debt policies, and the analysis performed by our web team shows this improvement area does not pose a great risk for cash flow deficiency. The financing is projected to be a $4.04 million bond sale with the true interest cost of 3.18%, subject to market conditions at the time of sale. The bonds are expected to be priced on May 6, 2020, and financing is anticipated to close on May 27, 2020. The underwriter will be Piper Sandler, and Renee Bancho, Vice President of Public Finance at Piper, as well as many members of our financing team, has joined us on the call, including Webb Municipal Finance, our Municipal Advisor, Fieldman, Roloff & Associates, as well as members of the AMWD team, all of which have worked very hard on the analysis and preparation of the documents. The approval of this action approves the resolution of issuance authorizing the sale of bonds, approves the trust indenture, preliminary official statement, continuing disclosure certificate, and authorizes the general manager, deputy GM, CFO to effect the issuance of the bonds. With that, we have to answer any questions you may have.
Do you have any questions to staff? If not, we'll accept a motion in a second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Swanson?
Aye.
Director Rucker?
Aye.
Motion Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We'll go to agenda item 4D, which is adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District acting as legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2013-63, which is Belle Terre. Improvement Area A, authorizing the issuance of 2020 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form.
Thank you. This is the second item and pertains to CFD 2013-63 Improvement Area A. This CFD improvement area was formed back in 2014 with the purpose of issuing bonds to reimburse the developer for their investments. The CFD was also established with the bonded indebtedness not to exceed $5 million. Just like the last one, Lennar Homes is also the developer of this development and has requested a bond sale to seek reimbursement for previously incurred expenses related to EMWD, Temecula Valley Union School District, and City of Temecula fees and facility improvements. The property within this improvement area is located in northern Temecula at the corner of Nicholas Road and Villalobo Road and is being marketed as Nicholas Heights. The property within the improvement area comprises roughly 73 gross acres and is planned for 83 single-family homes. We also had an appraisal done by Kitty Sino, and the appraised value came in at $39.7 million, which brought the value-to-lien ratio to nearly 14 to 1, far exceeding our requirements of 4 to 1. The improvement area has diverse property ownership with a 0% delinquency rate, and the effective tax is 1.73%, all of which meets our guidelines. Although the number of properties is below our guidelines, we're also recommending to proceed with the bond sale due to the rest of the requirements for passing our debt policy. In addition, we'll be requiring a special reserve fund to be established, which will be used to pay debt service prior to drawing on the debt service reserve fund in the event of any tax delinquencies. The financing is projected to be a $2.9 million bond sale with a true interest cost of 4.73%, subject to market conditions at the time of sale. The bonds are expected to be priced April 29th, 2020, and anticipated to close on May 20th, 2020. The underwriter on this one will be Stiefel Nicholas, and members of our financing team have worked diligently to put this together to bring forward to the board for consideration. The approval of this action also approves the resolution of issuance authorizing the sale of the bonds, approves the trust indenture, preliminary official statement, continuing disclosure certificate, and authorizes the general manager, WDGM, or CFO to effect the issuance of the bonds. With that, I'll also be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
When you guys establish a value for this property, do you do it before the improvements or after the improvements?
These are done after the improvements. Yeah. The appraisal was dated February 14th, I believe, and we also, in light of that, with the COVID-19 concerns really hitting us after that date, we asked that a supplement be conducted by Kitty Sino, just to make note that there, the COVID-19 concerns, and that we're recovered on the appraisal.
Okay, we'll accept the motion in a second.
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Rutherford?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Let's go to agenda item 5. Jeff has a recycled water allocation methodology and procedures presentation.
Unfortunately, I'm wearing a mask, so you don't have to stare at my ugly mug multiple times this morning.
I have the glasses fogging up problem too, Jeff, so do your best.
All right, thank you. So this morning, I would like to present to the board our recycled water allocations for the coming recycled water year. That's generally from April 1st and through March 31st of the subsequent year. So I have a brief presentation. I'll share to go over some of the numbers with you. By way of background, our recycled water obviously is produced by each of the four wastewater plants, and we're currently producing about 45 million gallons per day on average. During wet weather, this number can jump up to maybe 49 or 50, even 53 MGD, but typically on an average day throughout the year, it's 45 million gallons per day. We have the ability to meet our demands taking water from either the four wastewater plants or bringing water out of storage through our various pump stations. We can also supplement our recycled water with brackish groundwater from a couple of our desalter wells in the event that water is not needed for the desalters. And we can also purchase the raw water from Metropolitan Water District. The table on the lower right indicates how much water we do have available for sale. So we're producing about 46,000 acre feet per year. But we do lose about approximately 8,000 acre feet per year to evaporation and percolation. So the percolation is actually a good thing. It helps to restore groundwater basins, but we do also lose a percent to evaporation. On slide three, you can see a little more detail about our supplemental supplies. So we do have the raw water that can be brought into our system. At the Parish Water Filtration Plant, there's an outlet there from Metropolitan's raw water line that can inject it directly into our recycled water system through a small pump station. We also have two brackish water connections. One is at just north of the office here on the Trumbull, First Trumbull Road Pond. And the second item is our raw water, brackish water connection is at Sun City at the ponds. Raw water connections are good for about 5,000 gallons per minute, whereas the brackish water can produce about 3,000 gallons a minute. And the advantages of the two, brackish water is a lower cost alternative. You can see there it's about $108 an acre foot, but it is higher in TDS. So when we use the brackish water, just try to save money, we have to be mindful of the TDS that we're putting into our system. And we did, when we last did the 3 years, so we did start to hear from the girl right across the street where the salinity was getting a little higher than he would have liked to have seen. So we have to monitor that and be mindful of that. When we do see the salinity get too high, we would then need to convert to the raw water at a much higher cost. The following slide four provides some information. Again, we receive the water from production plus pumping out of our ponds. And that produces a maximum flow rate that our system, the total system, is capable of producing on any given day. Our peak demands generally are from June through October. And you can see from the bottom table there that we are planning on the peak day in June and July that we would deliver as much as 62,000 gallons a minute. That curve changes throughout the year, and it's highly dependent upon the activities of our agricultural community. Slide five, this graph just details how that water is used over the last 2 years, and it's been relatively consistent, with the one exception I would point out is that we have lost a really good customer, which is the Inland Empire Energy Center. That plant is now being disassembled, and it's got a site I understand is going to become a battery storage site. So they will not have any demand for recycled water. They were a great customer in the past. They did not use their water and they wanted to retain their allocation. They would have to pay us 50% for that portion of the allocation they did not use. So we will no longer enjoy that benefit. Looking at the two graphs, one on the left, we sold about just over 28,000 acre feet a year last year, and then this year we're approaching 30,000 acre feet per year. Going down to slide six, you can see that our demands do vary from year to year. I would just point, in 2019, which is the green bars, you can see how the peak demands really were kind of, we sold a lot of water in October and November compared to the prior years. So we are largely affected by the seasonal crops that are planted, as well as market prices, et cetera. And you can just see that over here on this graph. So we deal with these changes in demand by and the availability of water by previously established priority groups. So we have four priority groups that whereby we determine who gets the water first and based on different issues. So the first priority is the ag and lieu and our wholesale customers. These priority one users have. I'm sorry. These customers have either contributed capital to construct our system, so as a result of that capital contribution, they are given a break in the rate of their water, or alternatively, they're paying a very high rate, such as a streetscape or municipal use, That also applies for the priority two group. They haven't really as often or as frequently. We don't have long-term commitments in terms of capital contributions and 30-year agreements or whatever the case be. But they are also our highest paying groups. This includes golf courses, streetscapes, M&I, and recreational use. Priority three in the bottom right corner is for agricultural demand customers. And these customers pay a higher rate, allowing them to turn on and take the water when they need it based on their operation and their staffing. And then priority four receives the water at the lowest cost, and these customers are required to take that water on a 24-hour period. So because of their consistent take, they get a favorable rate because we don't have to push the water so hard through our system during peak times of the day. And that basically includes a wide variety of agricultural uses, our duck clubs, and then Fish and Wildlife Service for the San Antonio Wildlife Area. So the allocation methodology, we first look at the water available and we estimate, we don't actually allocate, but we estimate how much our priority one users are going to take. And then we go down to the priority two group, same thing, we estimate their usage based on history and calculate that total. And then we look at how much water is left for our priority three and our priority four customers. So priority three customers, again, they're the demand ed, they're paying a higher rate. We look at their usage, we contact them at this time of year, and give an estimate of how their operation may change and whether the demands might go up or down. And then after that, we look at the priority four users, and we reach out to them and ask them if they would like more water, and if so, we try to accommodate it based on the amount of water that's basically left in the system at that point. The allocations for our three and priority four users are based on a historical three-year average. And again, when we have water that becomes available, we will try to make that available to them on a proportional basis. Going to slide number nine is an example. Sometimes throughout the year, almost always our allocation is off, and we have either a surplus of water, or we're trying to remarket that, or we don't have enough water, and we have to turn on and augment our system with either brownish water or imported raw water. So in those years where we do have a surplus, we will approach the community, the users, and ask them if they would like more water. So this is just an example of how that would happen following our priority system. So for example, if we had 3,922 acre feet of available water, and we have priority three customers that wanted some of that water, we would make that available to them. And we carry the balance forward and start talking to our priority four customers and see how much that water they would like. Depending on those responses, we will then proportionally distribute that based on their allocation and then increase each user as requested allocation to the extent that we can. Going to slide number 10 is how our proposed allocations for the coming year line up. You can see large amount of water is sold primarily to our priority one and our priority four customers, relatively smaller amount to priority two and priority three customers. We have basically targeting to sell about 38,000 acre feet in the coming year, and we'll go through it. You can see the allocations that are proposed for the coming year relative to the prior year. And then again, I'll point out that only real significant change is with the Inland Empire Energy Center no longer being a customer. Our proposed schedule is following today's meeting with the board's approval. We will be sending out draft agreements that could happen as early as late this week or early next week. We will meet with customers as needed, phone conversations, sometimes one-on-one, face-to-face. And then based on those conversations, we will finalize those agreements. And our goal is to have all the agreements executed by May 8th. So our recommendation is that the board authorize the general manager to execute these recycled water use agreements for all of our priority three and priority four customers for the time period of April 1st through March 31st. And again, just to punctuate, we do not do these types of agreements with the priority one and priority two customers.
Just to clarify, we're not seeking the board's action on this item because under the administrative code, I'm already authorized to execute the agreements, but we wanted to be clear with the board on how the allocation methodology occurred with the customers.
Okay. Be happy to answer any questions.
Just as the California Fish and Wildlife, they have asked for any increases.
They have not. However, they are in the process of modifying and creating a new environmental impact report for the expansion of that San Antonio Wildlife Area. So myself and Joe have been in conversations, and Linnea here at the moment, but we've been in conversations with Mr. Hayes, who represents San Antonio Wildlife. They had originally told us back, and I believe it was January, that they thought they would have their document, their draft EIR published. We still have not seen that document, I believe. And so Joe and I and Linnea spoke this morning and are going to basically initiate those conversations, letting them know that we need to modify this agreement, or perhaps alternatively just let it expire and continue to serve them water. From our perspective, we do give an extremely favorable rate. That originally was a 30-year agreement, and it has been extended 5 times. And so I think we're at the point now where we seriously need to consider modifying that rate. Again, the capital components have been paid for, and they're getting a very, very favorable rate on the separate water.
I would encourage you to review that.
Well,
we're being fair to all our parties, all the recycled water customers.
You know, we agree. Of course, the management plan for the wildlife area and the companion EIR has been in the works for 5 years now. We've given 5 extensions to the agreement, so we're pretty much getting to the point where we're going to need to make some modifications. As you recall, one of the things we wanted to get from the management plan was an adjusted amount, because their current agreement provides substantially more water than they're actually using, and it kind of commits that water to them as a customer. So one of our goals through the management plan and the EIR was to have the amounts reset and then to reprice the agreement based on the economics. So if we don't get further action from them, we will be coming back to the board with some recommendations on a pricing adjustment.
If I can add to what Jeff and Paul are describing, the current extension expires this June. The board previously had authorized yet one last extension. So our position is that we will likely need to exercise that one last extension and use that time to renegotiate the agreement, to discuss the revised rates, and to also discuss the volume of water that we're providing or the quantity of water. So we believe this is our last opportunity, given that we have one last extension that we can execute to really renegotiate this agreement.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
With that, we'll go to agenda item 6, which is receive and file of accept a motion and a second for approval of items 6A through 6B.
I'm with you.
You have a second?
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Lawson?
Aye.
Director Ruckert?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. I just had one question before we go into calendar review. When we talked about RCWD going to discharge through the Tevry line, and I know that they have capacity, but are they going to pay whatever the flow is that's charged to SAPA?
Yes, there's a there's basically a price break, a fit charge that is already pre-established.
Okay.
It's in the agreement relative to their ownership and usage of that line.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, we'll go to calendar review. Nicole. Thank you.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. There are no new events to report this morning.
Or in the foreseeable future.
So we'll start with page 2, your master calendar for the next 2 weeks. The board executive committee will meet tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. for Directors Lawson and Sullivan. Monday, April 20th, the CalDFAL Executive Committee will meet via teleconference at 11 a.m., Director Pauly. Tuesday, April 21st, at 9:30 a.m., the SAPA Commission will meet. It's a virtual meeting, Director Slauson's calendar. On Wednesday, April 22nd at 7:30 a.m., Director Sullivan has an update meeting with the general manager. On Thursday, April 23rd, the Deferred Compensation Oversight Committee meeting has been canceled. Just a note for your calendars, Director Colley and Slauson. On Thursday, April 23rd.
No. We have not canceled that meeting. The Deferred Comp Oversight Committee.
I think Laura was going to head it in. Sorry for the confusion.
Okay, so. My apologies. The April 23rd meeting at 7:30 a.m. is on Director Colley and Director Hoffman.
I'm going to clarify. I got a cancellation notice yesterday, so
yes.
He can put that, make sure it got back on our calendar.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our apologies for that confusion.
Thank you. On Thursday, April 23rd at 3:30 p.m., the Board Operations and Engineering Committee will meet, Directors Slauson and Sullivan. On Tuesday, April 28th, the Metropolitan Water District Committee meetings will be held, Director Record. Monday, May 4th, the WRCOG Executive Committee will meet at 2 p.m., Director Sullivan. And on Tuesday, May 5th at 9:30 a.m., the Southwick Commission will meet, it will be a virtual meeting. And that's Director Sullivan's calendar. On the next page 3, have upcoming board meetings and committee meetings listed, followed by joint interagency meetings on page 4. Are there any additions to the calendar or any questions?
Do they still think they're going to have an Aqua conference in July?
Yes, the Aqua summer conference. So far,
even by what the governor said yesterday? We're just going to wait every 2 weeks to figure out if we're going to do something?
I would say that's up to the Aqua staff and board. I think there's thinking out there that that's a possibility that they'll be postponed again, but we'll see.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay. Okay, with that, we'll go to our individual monthly meetings. Director Record.
Do you not start with Director Crow?
I don't see him listed.
It's in the agenda, please. Yeah. Page 3.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong page. Got it. Okay.
I did not attend the Rancho Water meeting last week. And I did have my bi-monthly meeting with the general manager, which was good. And that's all I got.
Okay. Director Polly.
Yes, I just had a meeting with the deputy general manager. We had to discuss on some of the changes and bring me up to speed on how we're doing some administrative things in the district here. And again, I kudos to everybody for adapting during these times. So it's a very good meeting.
Okay. Now it's time for Director Record.
Joining the North County Caucus April 9th discussion mainly about the budget. Always a good meeting. Finance and Insurance Committee agenda review the same day. That's the chair of the Finance Committee, Jesus Quinones, and myself, along with CFO Pitano from Med. I think Paul covered the main part of the discussions and approval of the budget rates yesterday. Also, directed legal care, general counsel to litigation against the state for what they've done on the ability to export water. And it was very frustrating, and I did receive a letter from Department of Water Resources Director Carson Nemeth and Chuck Bottom of Cal Fish and Wildlife urging not to, but I really felt like we had to protect ourselves, so an awful lot of work has been happening the last couple of years, and it was
key actions from yesterday on the NWD meetings. Call General Manager April 2nd and a meeting update with General Manager April 8th. We had a lot of discussions about the budget and it turned out as well as it could. So that's my report.
Okay. Director Slauson.
Yeah, back to my vice president. Okay, I had a conference call with Lee Howard on April 2nd. We discussed not only the agenda, the upcoming agenda, but also legal matters. And the response to that is the Inland Empire Environmental Justice Team. I participated in the Building District Association COVID-19 response on April 6th, and Ken Calvert and Mayor Bailey were there, and Captain Supervisor. That was my team sort of updating everyone on what they were doing. I attended the Southwest Commission meeting, and we submitted a request for public assistance to authorize the bill to California Office of Emergency Services for Public Assistance. The COVID-19 update, and we approved an agreement with Contour and Conway to provide for the patient monitoring program, the Middle Center, the TMDL, Task Force, and Emergency Assistance Program. And I had my monthly meeting with Paul on the 13th, and via the telephone. But it's nice to have a lot of background information on this material. I did join a land use call with Matt, with the Inland and Orange County Caucus. And that was, I thought it was very informative. I learned a little more about around the agency what Randy's having to deal with, so that was good. Sorry, Randy.
That's okay, Dave. You should join more often. Good for your insight.
No, I'm sorry for what you have to go through. I also participated in the Chamber of Commerce Business and Action meeting of the 8th of April. And it was primarily on video conferencing and how to run your software, et cetera. So I'm ready to do Zoom or whatever else you want to do next time. That concludes my report.
Okay. I participated in just a review of the City of Paris's sewer system analysis what we would be facing if we wanted to assume some of that sewer responsibility. I thought it was a lot of very productive stuff done by the staff. I appreciated that meeting. On 6, I did also listen into and participate in the BIA's COVID response. You know, all four chair people, Congressman Calvert, Supervisor Karen Spiegel, BIA, Lou, and I can't remember the third one offhand. Mayor Bailey, yes. And I thought it was very well done. I also did attend last Friday the development segment that was a virtual presentation put on by the City of Menifee to make sure that all agencies are actually cooperating with City of Menifee in order to make things work in a development thing, whether it's a building permit or it's people going through the process. I thought it was well done for the first time that the city had done something like that. So, with that, that's all I have. Okay, we have any other comments or future agenda items from the directors? If not, counsel, we have reason for closed session today.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. It's in the agenda at the top of the meeting. Pursuant to Government Code Section 549.6.9.49 of potential litigation. And now we should adjourn to closed session.
Session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 549.6.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. Motion of Director Slauson, seconded by Director Pauley, the board voted unanimously to answer the complaint filed by, against the district by William Garren, G-A-R-R-E-N. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. Okay. We have any other comments or requests from any of the board members for future agenda items? If not, then we will adjourn this meeting to our regular meeting on Wednesday, May 6, 2020 at 9 a.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Dave and Randy for being here today.
Thank you.